This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today on this, the day of the final episode of the week in Iceland for 2025. My colleague Høgur Holm is here. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And we say good morning because we are having our conversation around about 11 o'clock this Monday morning. And one of the stories that we're going to talk about will actually develop during the day. We'll get to that as part of our conversation, though. But let us take a look at what happened over the last 7 days, firstly. And I guess the big news, not least here in this building, I suppose, is that RÚV, and by extension Iceland, is not going to be taking part in the Eurovision Song Contest next year.
That's right. That's correct. It's just sort of a continuing story from last year, where there was great pressure on RÚV not to take part because of Israel's participation. I think the pressure has been growing, and of course, a few other countries have decided to boycott the Eurovision contest. So there was pressure on RÚV to do something about it, and the Icelandic authorities. And I kind of feel that it was kind of a hot potato that everybody was throwing between them. I mean, the authorities, the head of RÚV, and then, of course, the CEOs of RÚV, who finally made the decision not to take part.
We should say that certainly judging by the comments on the RÚV English Facebook page and elsewhere, and emails as well, lots of people are happy with this decision, but obviously lots of people are unhappy with this decision as well. That should be reflected.
Yeah, you're correct. And that was also to be expected because this issue is, people are very divided on it. But I think, and there's been a poll that suggests that the majority is happy with the decision. And
not an overwhelming majority.
No, but a
clear majority.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of a, like I mentioned from last year, I think it's just this thing or this feeling has been developing since last year. And so, and even from a few years back.
Yeah.
Remember when Iceland's participants had that. They used the Palestinian flag. So
when they were getting their points at the end of the contest. Yeah.
So and there has been growing anger against the way that the Israeli authorities have been acting in Gaza and the West Bank. So I think the decision is, it's not a big surprise.
No. And there was also unhappiness, not just on the part of RÚV, but within Europe, within the contest. It was felt that the Israeli public broadcaster had perhaps, totally separate to anything to do with Gaza, had perhaps campaigned for Israel to win votes from the public in a way that wasn't quite in the spirit of the competition. So those rules have been changed.
Yeah.
Guidelines have been changed. And that is a separate issue to any consideration of what Israel might or might not be doing in Gaza. So that's worth mentioning as well. It's also interesting because 2 years ago, we didn't know during Sungvakeppnin if the winner of that contest was going to go to the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd done the Icelandic or the English language commentary rather on the Icelandic programme. So we didn't know during that programme if the person winning, who was Heri Björk 2 years ago, was going to go to Eurovision. I suppose this time at least we know that if Sungvakeppnin takes place, and there's still doubt about that, we know that it's going to be disconnected from Eurovision.
Absolutely. And like you said, no decision has been made about whether we will do the Sungvakeppnin.
Yes.
Some people feel it's kind of pointless because it won't lead to anything else. But others think that having the Sungvakeppnin here at least is some sort of a little plaster on the wound, so it gets something.
And it's the 40th anniversary, would be, if it happens.
Yeah, because Iceland first took part in 86. So,
yes.
Yeah. But like I said, the decision not to take part doesn't come as a surprise. I wouldn't have been very much surprised if we would have taken part, but I kind of expected this outcome.
I was leaning towards it too, I think,
yeah,
in terms of expecting what might happen.
Yeah. What I was kind of more thinking about was who's going to make a decision?
Yes.
Because there are those, like I said, the sort of the executive board of RÚV, and then there's the head of RÚV.
Yes, and one of those boards, of course, is politically appointed.
Yeah, yeah.
By Althingi, by the parliament.
Yes, but the body that made the decision is the body below that, the professionals here. And then there would, of course, been the Icelandic authorities. I mean, I don't think if the board of RÚV would have made the decision, like you said, it's politically appointed, they would probably have been in contacted or in discussion with the authorities, I would think.
Well, the two boards, the two different boards that we've described there, they were broadly in agreement anyway, which is why this didn't have to go to a vote on the meeting last week.
Yeah.
But in terms of what ministers have said, there's been a clear, if steer is the right word, I don't know, from the foreign minister. She has said that she does not think that Iceland should take part. I know the Minister of Culture, media is part of his brief as well. He had said his own personal view last week was that he was leaning towards Iceland, not taking part because Israel was. Is that mood music, do you think?
No
pun intended?
No. But I think those comments you mentioned and a lot more sort of gave the impression that where we were headed. So that's why I said that I'm not all that surprised of the outcome.
Yes. Well, the question now, of course, is whether Sungvakeppnin takes place next year. And I know that Paul Oskar, the pop star of many years' fame here in Iceland, suggested that he would phone all of his friends, including Björk, and just have a big musical party celebrating Icelandic musical talent. Maybe there are some other Icelandic musical names on that list as well, or could be. Would that be a good idea?
It would be a good idea in the way that it would give the Icelandic public something to rejoice about and be happy, and because this is sort of an annual kind of happy event, really. The Sungvakeppnin before Eurovision, it's something that everybody has an opinion on, whether it's really bad or really good.
And even people that say they hate it still watch it.
Yeah. I'm not too keen about myself, about Eurovision, but I... Yeah. And Sungvakeppnin, but I watch it up to a point.
You see the reason for it being there.
Yeah. It is entertainment. But Paul Sorska's idea about some sort of Icelandic Sungvakeppnin, it would be, like I said, it would probably bring some joy to some people, some consolation. But in a way, at the same time, it's kind of pointless in the sense that it's not leading up to the big one, Eurovision.
So I guess maybe the question is, if you take the competition out of the word Sungvakeppnin and you make it just a song celebration, perhaps.
Yeah,
who knows?
Just a TV program.
Yeah, much to watch next year on that. A story that has caught a lot of attention, not just here in Iceland, but across Europe, is the story of the sperm donor with a life-threatening genetic defect who fathered 197 children. He didn't know about the defect that he had, we should say that. Some of that sperm ended up in a fertility clinic in Iceland. One of the Icelandic children conceived with the sperm of this Danish donor, happily, does not carry its genetic mutation. That was confirmed last week. But there are four children in Iceland conceived using this donor sperm. So this is a big and a worrying story.
It is. It really is. And hopefully those other children are also free of this defect. But it creates the thought that, I mean, sperm donors, the risk, like you said, he didn't know about his situation, but the risk of children being conceived in this way is that there is no way, or very difficult to sort of prevent, I mean, later on, children who are related maybe getting into a...
I mean, I don't know if that's screened for. I don't know if there is
neither
testing.
I
would assume there's some level of check.
It has to be. I mean, it needs to be. But this story, it kind of it's big and it's shocking, really. Mm-hmm. And also because there are so many children that have been conceived with this donor sperm. And so the likelihood of, I don't know the percentage, but I think we can assume that quite a lot of them may have this defect.
Mm. Happily, as we say, we know of one that does not. We hope that the other four children, the other three children in Iceland, and we hope that none of the children out of the 197 are affected by this. Now, as I say, we're having a conversation on Monday morning, later on today, and I think by the time you hear this conversation, the investigation committee that was tasked by Althingi into looking into the Súðavík avalanche of 1995 will have completed its work and indeed published its findings. We don't know what they are at this stage, but maybe just worth going back over what happened in 1995, because this avalanche took a lot of lives.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, 14 people died, I think, and I think 8 of them were children. And
yes.
It was really horrific. Just about a month before this avalanche, this was in January, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
In December, exactly a month before, there was another avalanche in Súðavík, but it struck the sort of the edge of the town.
Mm.
And I went there, and it hit one house, and one old man was taken to hospital with minor injuries, but he ended up half outside the window. He was kind of lucky. He was sitting in his living room. His phone rang, which was in the kitchen, I think. And then the avalanche struck. So if he had been in the living room, he would have been killed.
Mm.
But then a month later, this happened. And it's going to be really interesting to get the results of this committee, because what also happened during that disaster is that the authorities in Súðavík and the Westfjords, they sort of, it was really bad weather, but they sort of limited everything that the media could do. The media was there right away, of course, or as soon as they could, with along with the rescuers. But the head of police there, he ordered that they would be kept in a house because the weather was too bad. So we have very limited footage of this disaster, and that probably didn't help this committee.
Yes,
the limited resources they had. But
I suppose if something were to happen like this these days, currently, there would be lots of amateur footage taken. People would be using their phones. There'd be a lot more material to work with were something as awful as this to happen again.
Yeah, but it's going to be very interesting to hear what the committee finds out, because we don't have a great tradition here in Iceland of like these public inquiries, not perhaps as many as we maybe should. But it's really important to view their findings, if we can learn something from it.
Yes.
Which I think we, or experience has taught us a lot, I think, since that time. But hopefully their findings will point us to a better way.
If anyone's wondering why this committee is only reporting now, given that these events happened 30 years ago, the Parliament, Althingi, only resolved last year, April of 2024, to create the committee.
Yeah.
To make the investigations. And just if you're wondering where we're talking about, Súðavík is a town, it's maybe a 15-minute drive to the east of Ísafjörður in the Westfjords.
A very small village.
Very small village. The Arctic Fox Research Centre is there, one of the shows we've made on Roof English Radio. And I know that road from there into Ísafjörður closes quite a lot because of rockfall.
Yeah.
So, you know, that tells you how exposed the road is and how exposed the town is.
Yeah. And like the avalanche that I mentioned that happened a month before, it took, 12 hours or something to get that man who got injured to the hospital in Ísafjörður because the avalanche had hit the road.
Yes.
And so it's, and they're, of course, now they're talking about making a tunnel through there. But these conditions that were back then, it was really bad weather and the town being sort of isolated. So it was really a horrific yes. event.
You can hear a show on Roof English Radio either this week or just after New Year, depending on the scheduling, I'm not entirely sure, but from the Technical Museum in Seyðisfjörður, part of which is dedicated to what the landslide and the snowfall did to that town and that part of East Iceland. But just going back to this in Súðavík, and indeed, I suppose, more widely across the country, it does seem as if Iceland has got better with preventing these tragedies, because we see this sort of netting up on the hills around so many towns now, don't we?
Much better, much better. And it's also worth mentioning that less than a year after this, we had another avalanche in a nearby town called Flateyri, where a lot of people also died. So, and I remember when, in the aftermath of Súðavík avalanche, I was talking to an expert at the meteorology office, who decide on where you can build and where you cannot build, because they give their opinion. And I was talking to him, and he said, we're having our problem, he said, is that the head of municipalities, they are always on our back, not to block us from being blocked from building here and building there. They want to keep all the slots where they can build, even though they're in a dangerous area. Mm. So he was saying they're putting a lot of pressure on us. I think that may have changed.
Yes.
And also, like you mentioned, there's a lot of precautions have been taken in various towns and villages in Iceland since then, mainly since those like two big avalanches.
Yes. Well, as we say, by the time you hear this conversation today on Monday, the committee will have published its findings very likely in Althingi. Let's turn to some good news here. The road between Hafnarfjörður and Reykjanesbær has finally been dualled. It is now dual carriageway all the way, which is going to make getting to and from Keflavik Airport from the capital easier, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really funny, really. At the end of 2025, this is the main road from the main airport to the main city in the country that we're actually celebrating having a dual road, which of course should have been made decades ago.
Yes.
But it's here now, and that's good. But it's kind of funny that in this day and age, finally now we have a dual road all the way.
Yeah, the first time we came, 1998, I think maybe half of it was, and it kept switching between dual carriageway and single carriageway, which is obviously dangerous for all kinds of reasons. But the road has been improved, and so now between Hafnarfjörður and Reykjanesbær. So there's still a bit then beyond Reykjanesbær as far as the airport, going past Ásbrú, I guess, which is still single carriageway.
Yeah, it is, hopefully they will
find a way of fixing it.
Yeah, but like I said, it's really weird talking about this really being an issue, something
One of the reasons why it's a good thing, I think, is that this road is quite easy to keep open because it is a dual carriageway.
Yeah.
So even when there's a ton of snow that falls on the road, generally one lane is abandoned and the other lane is kept open.
Yeah.
And so that road tends to stay open.
It is. And it's also worth mentioning that when they started making a dual road, it was from pressure from people living in Keflavik and Reykjanesbær in the area near the airport. They really put their foot down and said, because we had a lot of fatal traffic accidents on that road. They were quite frequent. So the people in Keflavik and Reykjanesbær said, we need to have better roads, safer roads. So that really started this development, which is finally at this stage.
Well, that's really important because, of course, this is the road that connects the airport to the capital, but it's also the road that connects the, 20,000 people that live in and around Reykjanesbær to the capital as well.
Yeah, it's probably one of the busiest roads in Iceland.
Yes, it's the closest thing we have to a motorway.
Yeah, closest thing we have to a motorway. And also worth mentioning that a lot of drivers that are not used to the Icelandic conditions, foreigners, tourists that are coming, they rent a car at the airport.
Yes.
This is the first road they drive. So And driving in Iceland isn't always easy due to the state of the roads, due to the weather and all sort of things. So it's even more important to have that road sort of a roadworthy.
Yes, so that's the road finally now open. It was the only remaining section of Reykjanesbrautin that had yet to be upgraded to a dual carriageway. And it was opened on a very windy day last week,
yeah,
wasn't it? If you look at the photos.
Yeah, it's very appropriate.
21,400 vehicles use the road every day,
yeah,
according to Vegagerðin, who are the road administration.
Yeah.
Right. We are at a time of, you know, not conflict so much within Iceland, but I think it's fair to say controversy, all sorts of issues are quite divisive. I think we end today with a story which is going to unite absolutely everybody. And if you aren't cheered up by this story, then you're not going to be cheered up by everything. You're just a misery guts, basically. This is something that everyone in Iceland, all Icelanders, I think, can absolutely get behind, because Iceland's swimming pool culture has been formally recognised as a living tradition by UNESCO. It's now on the list of intangible cultural heritages of humanity. And a lot of people have been pushing for this for years, haven't they?
They have, and this is, of course, stems from Iceland's abundance of geothermal power. Mm. So we have a lot of swimming pool, as you, of course, know, in Reykjavik and all over the country. And so we're sort of being brought up, being very used to going to a swimming pool, laying in a hot tub, and it is an integral part of our culture, I think.
And identity.
Identity, I think. And so this being recognized in this way is nice. It's good to know.
I'm going to read the words of a politician. And again, regardless of your view of this politician, regardless of your view of his party, surely there is not a single Icelander or member of the Althingi that could not agree in this instance with Louis Einarsson, who's the Minister for Culture, Innovation and Higher Education. He said, "This has enormous significance for our self-identity to highlight a healthy, wholesome and enjoyable cultural heritage. It is also heartening in the times in which we live to be able to present such a positive image of daily life in an island nation out at sea. I think this is something that could spread as widely as possible." So again, difficult to pull apart any of that.
Yeah, and I think those many swimming pools and them being so nice and enjoyable to visit, is that every child in Iceland learns to swim pretty early on, mm-hmm, which of course is just important security and. For their security,
because there was a time that Icelanders didn't know how to swim.
Largely. And drownings were quite frequent also, because back in the day when they were being a fishing nation in open boats, and people didn't know how to swim, and they even have invited children from Greenland, for example, to Iceland just to teach them how to swim, because they're sort of in the same position that Icelandic children were 50, 60, 80 years ago or something.
But with no geothermal energy.
No.
I know there's a pool in Nuuk, but it's not, yeah, you know, you're not swimming outside there, are
no,
you?
No, unfortunately not. But the swimming thing is, it's on so many levels. It's for swimming, for just going there to lie in the hot tub and relax. Part of this culture is, probably in most swimming pools all over Iceland, is that in early in the morning, like 7 o'clock in the morning or something, a lot of people, mostly maybe pensioners, but also people just going to the swimming pool before they go to work, they sit, yes, in the hot tubs and they discuss politics and everything, and they always have the correct solution for every problem. This is also part of the culture that sort of comes from this swimming pool, having all those swimming pools, is that you have these little or small, really, parliaments there.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, I go literally every day.
Yeah.
I go to the gym first thing in the morning and then to the pool straight after as well. So I was there this morning. It's about -4 degrees in Reykjavik today. So I was there not just in the hot tubs, but in the cold pots as well.
Yeah.
Do you spend time in those? Do you go into those?
No, not to the cold pots, but I swim. I'm not a great swimmer, but I swim. Then I sort of relax for like 20 minutes in the hot tub. The swimming pool closest to my, where I live has a saltwater hot tub, which is really nice to relax in. But I think this swimming, I mean, it's even, I think even young people, when they start dating, they, instead of inviting someone out for dinner or to a movie, they invite them to, should you go to a swimming pool?
You do see what look like young couples.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of getting to know each other.
Chatting away in the pool. And for this to be recognised, I think all Icelanders are going to agree is fantastic. For people outside of the country that come to Iceland to visit, I always say that this is one of the most Icelandic things you can do in every sense apart from one, because it's actually quite cheap. It doesn't cost a lot of money to do it.
It's really cheap. And also, the worth mentioning also that the swimming pool themselves, they are sort of almost warm. Not they're not freezing cold as you find
the main
in some
main pool the main pool outside. Is they're about 25-26 degrees,
so
think,
it's like comfortable to swim there, and you see a lot of tourists in the swimming pools
for sure. Some more than others, but it's definitely something that I recommend. I have nothing against the likes of the Blue Lagoon and the big spas, but I always say to friends when they come over, especially if they're staying with us, you know, you can do that if you want, for sure, but the real experience, and one that's a hell of a lot cheaper, is coming with me to the municipal pools.
Yeah. I think the swimming pools, they're the real deal.
Yes.
The Blue Lagoons and places like that, they're pretty picturesque and of course, great to visit. But a swimming pool, that's the real deal.
It's about £8 sterling, so about €9, I think, something like that, to be in one of those pools. And you can be there all day as well. I know a lot of people that come from the UK are quite surprised because they have maybe childhood memories of having to wear a yellow band or a red band or a blue band, and you've only got 15 minutes, you know, once the colour is shouted on the speaker system. You can spend all day in the pool if you want.
That's because I'm getting on in my life, but I remember when I was a kid, and there were fewer swimming pools, of course, in Reykjavik back then. Then there was this system.
So that happened here?
Yeah, but that's like 60 years ago or something.
Right.
But like you mentioned, you can be there at like 6:30 or 7 in the morning and stay until 9 o'clock in the evening.
You'd be a bit wrinkly. I don't recommend spending 15 hours in the hot pot, because then you'd feel a little bit ill, I think.
But. And then, of course, all those swimming pools, they also have saunas and all sort of other stuff that you can enjoy while you're
and
visiting.
And the cold pots, absolutely recommend that you do. It sounds awful, it sounds horrifying, but once you start doing it every day, you feel fantastic.
Refreshing?
Absolutely refreshing. 3 minutes in there every day, you'll be as good as new. Heartily recommend it. Oike, thank you very much for your time today. Great to talk.
My pleasure.
It's Ruving Gleithaliol, we should say, because I probably won't see you.
Yeah, Gleithaliol, yeah.
It's Roof English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. You can get in touch anytime. We're english@ruv.is.
There is more from Roof English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Roof English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Roof.